Are you ready?
Yes, we certainly are.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 392 for the week of January 31st, 2022. I am problematic French fry continuity, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Goldschlager of Fate, Sarah D. Bunting.
You're fucking ripped.
And horny syndicator Tara Ariano.
I used to work in Calgary.
And originator of the messy updo, Dave Holmes.
Hey, it's fun. It's sexy.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the very first time, he is an editor at large at Esquire. He is the host of the podcasts Homophilia and Waiting for Impact. It's Dave Holmes.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah.
Whoa, it's great to be here. This is great. Thank you so much for having me.
We're thrilled to have you as a scholar of the 1990s and 2000s because our topic today is Pam and Tommy.
Oh, what a pleasure.
Just going to let the listeners know what it's about. It's 1995. Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee, Sebastian Stan, newly married to Baywatch star Pamela Anderson, Lily James, is having some work done on his house. He happens to be a nightmare client for his contractors, changing his mind on a whim and stiffing them on their invoices. When they try to force the issue, Tommy fires them on the spot. Then one of them, former adult film performer Rand Gauthier, Seth Rogen, also a producer, decides to get even by stealing the safe out of Tommy's garage. In it, he finds a bunch of stuff he can easily sell, plus a Hi8 tape that turns out to contain some very private footage of our titular couple. In addition to Rogen behind the camera, talent includes Robert Siegel, the writer-director of The Wrestler, as co-creator, and Craig Gillespie of I, Tonya, directed several episodes. And the first three of those dropped on Hulu February 2nd. We'll be talking about all of those, and the remaining five will drop one at a time on Wednesdays. Let's do the Chen check-in where we just briefly, yes or no, should our listeners watch this show? Dave Holmes.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yeah, a couple of quibbles, but yes.
Dave. Cole.
Yes to half of the show.
Mm-hmm. It's really watchable, so I'm going to say yes to, but I have some issues. So let's get into them. Mm-hmm. Starting with Dave Holmes, like the rest of us, you were an adult when the story broke, not to dox you.
Sure was.
What did you think when you learned that it was being turned into a docudrama? Is this a story that you felt needed to be told in this way from this era?
No, I mean, it didn't necessarily jump out at me as something that we needed to revisit in the prestige TV format. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it, you know, the thing is, as we look back on the 90s, we notice how fundamentally different they were from the reality that we live in now. Mm-hmm. And there are so many moments where you know, the viewer goes like, why didn't they just, you know, Google it? Or why didn't they, whatever. They're just like little things because it's so close to where we are now. Yeah. But it's like, oh no, they were living in a completely different universe that I was also an adult with bills in my name during, you know, but it's like, but it might as well be, you know, the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really dug it. I will just say off the top, I do think it's a mistake. Casting Sebastian Stan as Tommy Lee. Not that he doesn't do an excellent job, because he does, but because he has a face that's pleasant to look at. And that that changes the story. Mm-hmm. It really does. Like Tommy Lee, for all that he had going for him, had and continues to have a bad face, just a real real rodent-y face.
I would have.
Too.
Yeah, I mean, I was really more of a Nikki Sixx guy, but
sure.
I mean, you know. I saw the actual tape.
Sure.
I had a public access show once upon a time.
Come on.
Which I edited reel to reel on two VCRs. And my sister or our brother show, Gentlemen of Leisure, like it just aired the whole tape in their time slot. And you know, like that tape was like the fodder for so many jokes with that group of people for like 10 years. And I still make them like to myself, even though I'm not really in contact with those people anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a dominant cultural thing. But then to be reminded by the show how different that was in terms of how it came to be versus mm-hmm. now. It's mm-hmm. like Rand explaining to Nick Offerman, Uncle Milty, is that the character's name? Mm-hmm. Like how a search engine works and like what the World Wide Web is. I was just mm-hmm. like, I mean, a little of this is low-hanging fruit, but also like these are conversations I, working on the World Wide Web, had to have with people 10 years or older than I mm-hmm. daily to explain what I did.
Into the 2000s. Oh, like well into. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think for us, me, Tara, and Sarah, you know, we had that Television Without Pity site that was very popular in the day. But my parents didn't give two shits about it until we were written up in the New York Times. And mm-hmm. then it was something they wanted to ask me about.
And that page is framed after. And it's still on my father's piano because that was when they were like, oh, the internet exists.
So, Dave, I know Motley Crue is a product of the 80s, but did your paths cross in your music career at all?
They did once.
Oh.
They did once. And I will, how dirty can it get?
Very dirty.
As dirty as you like.
Okay, good.
Control A.
Good, good, good. So I don't know what that means. All right. He was a commentator or maybe a presenter or something at the MTV Sports and Music Festival in or around the year 2000, where we would go out to Lake Elsinore and it would be, you know, dirty, filthy, you know, extreme sports. People would do all kinds of, you know, flipping all around on their bikes and skateboards and stuff. And then like, you know, Godsmack would play or whatever. So he was there. And I guess he was one of the commentators. So we're up on like the big camera tower overlooking the grounds. And it's him and Sal Masekela and me. And we're like doing a thing where we like wrap up the whole event. Mm-hmm. And then we got to climb down the camera tower. And there's like a big group of fans around for Tommy Lee. Tommy was perfectly friendly to me. He wasn't bad. But we got down to the ground and there were all of these like desert women who just wanted to like hug him and touch him. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget this as long as I live. As we were kind of being pulled away by security, a woman had hugged Tommy Lee. And as he got pulled away from her, she whispered to him, but stage whispered loud enough for all of us to hear, "If you take me home with you, I will suck your dick for 24 hours. And he said, and he, as he was pulled away, he said, "Oh, word." And that was it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was my, And, you know, of course, like the shirt was off and he's covered in, you know, dirty, gross tattoos. And,
sure.
Like perfectly friendly guy, but, you know, Sebastian Stan is, you know, he's pleasant. He has a pleasant face. Yes. He seems
like a sweetie. Right. Yes.
Yeah. I can understand where Lily James, Pamela Anderson, mm-hmm. would overcome her reservations.
Sure.
I think a real life Tommy Lee would really, you'd spend a little more time deciding.
I thought you were going to say it's because he was too short, because that was distracting to me. He is wee. Okay. He's an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? He's got good legs. His calves are in proportion to the rest of his body. Tommy mm-hmm. Lee had that like skinny calf thing. Yeah. Especially like when he got kind of like hip hoppy with like the big baggy long shorts and the high socks. You would just see this tiny window of skinny calf and it was like I'm grossed out.
A tiny window of skinny calf. There's a new sentence for the English language.
Oh, I use it all the time.
It sounds like everybody else was familiar with this sex tape in one way or another. Some of us, like Sarah D. Bunting, haven't watched it 1,000 times or whatever she just said. I don't know.
Okay.
I will say that I didn't know the history of this. So coming into this show, I thought it was going to be about Pam and Tommy, but it turns out like the first episode is about the Seth Rogen character, this carpenter who, you know, obviously gets his hand on the tape in the end, and that's where it all comes from. But it had this very Boogie Nights feel to it. Mm-hmm. And that part of it I enjoyed because, like, as celebrity culture goes, I'm really just not interested in that sort of thing. So when they switched gears in episode 2 and it just became the story of how Pam and Tommy met and then all the crazy shit they did before they got married 2 hours later, according to the TV show. Yeah.
It was literally 4 days in real life.
Was it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I really kind of got into the porn intrigue angle of it. Mm-hmm. But then I wasn't into the rock star and super celebrity coming together cultural impact kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it really is one show or the other. Like, they don't really mix it very well. And Tara had a really good observation. Everybody at the show is treated like a complete idiot.
Yeah. I mean, this is a kind of a problem that I had with I, Tonya, too, that it has a bit of, like, there's a little whiff of, like, look at these dum-dums. And, like, I'm not here to say that Pam and Tommy aren't dum-dums, but, like, if that's the case, why are we watching a show about them? You know, it just seems like it's ridiculous to say it's punching down when these are two very wealthy, powerful people in the entertainment industry, but it does feel like there's something about it that's a little condescending that made me, that I felt was a little sour.
But if you imagine this story told by, like, Fargo era Coen brothers, it kind of feels like it could have been right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, kind of a farcical, everybody is so inept that success is guaranteed somehow, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what we got. We kind of got a, you know, nose up kind of take on it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was like a love letter on behalf of everybody who's been stiffed by this kind of person or situation. But I think that it was smart to, I think that it was smart to frame it this way. Like, I don't think that it's condescending so much. I mean, maybe it is. And I think it's also trying to interest us in, like, the trials of Pamela Anderson Lee, like, not getting to do her big monologue. But the fact is that a lot of famous people, like, the primary and sole source of interest really is that they are famous. Like, they're they're not that interesting. They're not that smart. They're not that relatable. And in order to make a whole show about how they were violated by the publication of their sex tape, which, like, I don't think Tommy Lee minded that for even a hot second. Not that it wasn't wrong. I'm just saying I don't think he minded. But, like, to put these people at the center of it, like, unfortunately, yes, you have to, because it's called Pam and Tommy. But then, like, over the course of 8 episodes, like, sometimes people are just famous because they're pretty or they play music well, but they're not particularly, like, emotion. There's no, like, emotional terrain there. They're just pretty and they play music well. And that's fine. Yeah. But it's 8 episodes. And they're long.
See,
like, I don't know.
I didn't find it to be condescending toward Pamela Anderson so much. I mean, she definitely acts stupidly in it, but I don't think that we're meant to believe that she's stupid. Like, she advocates for herself pretty well. She's clear, like, and in real life, that was kind of who she was. Like, she was, you know, she had all the signifiers of the dumb blonde, but was, you know, like, a little bit savvier than that. And what I was getting from it was just that she had become so disorientingly famous and like, admired for the wrong reasons, and was in that, like, dumb part of your life where you act out a little bit, and maybe maybe she needed somebody who was as much a piece of garbage as Tommy Lee to, like, protect her and beat people up for her or whatever. And it's just, you know, and if you, you know, you do ecstasy for the first time and it's like, you really do think, like, I better marry this person. Like, I found that I found it to be extremely uncharitable to Rand Gauthier, Seth Rogen's character, who's just, it's like they just pile humiliation on top of humiliation onto that character. He's, you know, he's a pants wetter. He has a small dick. His wife
jerking,
you know,
off
for
with
woman.
Frozen peas on his hand. Like,
yeah, he's Ziggy.
He is Ziggy. I mean, he can lift a safe, but other than that, he's Ziggy. So that bugged me, but the I think the reason why the Pam and Tommy of it is interesting is why I found the tape so interesting, which is not so much the sex and the nudity and all that. Of course, that was great. For me, watching it, it was like the picture of two people who don't know each other at all, who have just, like, have just gotten married and now they're, you know, jumping off a boat and wherever the hell they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, and they keep calling each other baby, and it's like, even back then, I was like, they're doing that because they're not 100% certain of each other's
right.
names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
and
they just met and they're real high. And like, so that, like, I think they're building, I mean, you get moments where they're getting to know you yes. sometimes to that actual song.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they are a married couple. But I, yeah, mm-hmm. I the more I talk about it, the more I actually really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to keep watching it, but
yeah. yeah.
Talking about the Seth Rogen character, that character did definitely suck me into it because, again, if you're not super interested in the relationship, the fact that episode one moving into episode two, as you realize what's going on, not having, you know, really dug into the story at all, it's like, oh, this is a revenge story. I could kind of get into this on that yeah. level as well. Like, it is really, like, they do pile everything onto the Ziggy character, but then that kind of makes the revenge part of it more satisfying, probably not accurate to life, but right. as a piece of entertainment, I really got into that part of it.
I believe Tommy Lee's that much of a piece of garbage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
yeah.
You know he's got friends who look like the guy from Crazy Town who, like, hang out at the house.
But, oh, yeah.
The Ocean's 11 of it all, with his plan, yeah. Spray painting his van, doing the whole, you know, I'm going to do the schedule night and day and do all my notes, dressing up like a dog in order to fool the cameras and all this sort of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it was so absurd and Boogie Nightsian that I just really got into that part of it. And then when episode two came, I was like, oh, more of that, please.
I wanted to ask our guest, and I mean the whole panel, how you felt the music cues were handled, because as the show went on, for me, it started to become intrusive. Did anyone else feel this way?
Yeah, it was intrusive, and those songs can intrude on me any old time.
That aside, but there's like a whole sort of like golden age of, you know, Rat Pack thing happening. But then there's also mm-hmm. Steal My Sunshine, which, like, look, I'm not going to kick either of these off of the old iPhone, but mm-hmm. it started to feel to me a little bit like, look how much money we got to clear this shit. Like, okay, sure. You're on Hulu. But it, yeah. We get it.
Yeah. The 90s songs really take you there, though. You get La Bouche in a club scene. You're in that club.
Yeah, it's true.
I also feel like before we move on from Rand, I need Dave Holmes to tell yes. us how he felt the Valley realness was in this project.
It seemed more Mar Vista. I'm okay. not going to lie. mm-hmm. It seemed more Palms.
This
me.
Is why you're
his,
here.
His apartment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You don't get apartments like that in hilly spaces in the Valley. You just don't. That mm-hmm. that is definitely more, that's more Palms.
Having lived in Marina Del Rey once upon a time, your Mar Vista observation is mm-hmm. perfect.
Taken. Great. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it could be Culver City. Uh-huh. But the feel of it is very Valley. The, yeah. You know what? Actually, no. The desperation of it is also more Culver City. Mm-hmm. Valley's a lot of young families and stuff now.
At that time,
there's
or
good
now?
Gastro pubs out here. Yeah. No, back then, no, you wouldn't be caught dead in anywhere in the Valley back right. then. I'm sorry, anyone who grew up in the Valley, you probably would. Heim seemed to have loved it, but yeah,
they're fine.
Yeah, yes. I started coming out here in the late 90s, and I don't think I ever really even got to the Valley until like 2005. Right. And now I live here.
I was glad that Sarah called out the Goldschlager, too, because that also felt like an extremely mid-90s choice.
Oh, God. And such a, so, I mean, the way this production design, like, it can be very self-conscious in making you notice, like, look how big and blocky everyone's TVs are. They're shot in, like, fisheye just to make sure that you understand that a TV was, like, this literal idiot box that weighed a gazillion mm-hmm. pounds. All the square neck tank tops, all the, like, vintage 70s shirts and vinyl pants mm-hmm. and, I don't, like, that did take me back to a time that, and the soundtrack, but just like the, I'm not sure if Pam and Tommy's sex tape, like IRL, was like a symptom or a cause of this like embrace of underbelly culture that was kind of blithe about like criminality and rapiness in it. Mm-hmm. But their ability to convey it, like the sort of Sour Patch Kid of memory, is really quite amazing. It, like, again, it's very watchable. It's like beautiful to look at and how ugly it sometimes is. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of scenes where you're just like when they're on the plane and they're both about to jump out of their skins from how hungover and terrified they are. It's like, okay, this is telling us something. I'm not overall sure what it's going to be after 8 episodes, and I'm not sure it's going to have needed 8 episodes.
Right.
But I mean, I'm in. Like, again, I have a couple of quibbles, but they're just quibbles. So,
mm-hmm. Can we talk before we move on about Jason Mantzoukas as the voice of Tommy Lee's penis? Dave Holmes, please start us off.
Is that who that was? I knew I recognized the voice.
He's getting typecast as voices of genitalia.
He sure is. And maybe this is because we got an advanced screener, but I was. The thing that was off-putting about Tommy Lee talking to his dick there were dots on it. Now I feel like that's just some CGI stuff that
I hope so. Yeah,
you can see there were also like plastic things that were holding on this puppet that was being puppeteered by somebody.
It didn't occur to me at first because I was thinking, what kind of tattoo is this? Like, and why would you?
I thought that too. Yeah. Like, yeah, but
I didn't think it was a tattoo. I thought it was an STI. But I mean, that also works. It's
a tattoo of an STI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That does seem like a Tommy Lee thing.
That choice to anthropomorphize the penis was, it's okay if that doesn't come back. That'd be okay if
I agree.
That was a one and done.
It felt very off-tone to me from the rest of the project, Sarah, your feelings.
I understand why this decision was taken, and I hope that I hope we're done with it. Like, this is like a legendary instrument. Fine. I don't think
is it.
That's Professor Bunting to you. Yeah, I mean, fine. Like, if you want to hang a light on it, wah wah.
Not that the penis had anything profound to say, but I feel like up to that point, Tommy's engagement to the viewer was rather limited because he is a person of limited emotional range, and I felt like that attempt to reach inside of his mind seemed kind of out of place, just like thematically, never mind the fact that it was a talking, very articulated penis.
Yeah.
But I don't need any more of that either.
I was happy, though, that it mentioned Heather, as in Heather Locklear, and described her as too conservative, which,
too
like,
conservative.
No, sweetie.
Yeah, Scott Baio, speaking of conservative, gets a shout out.
Yep, Denise Richards, yeah. David Charvet.
David Charvet. We also get
all the past sex tape havers, including Rob Lowe, which I don't know how happy he's going to be to have that brought back up again in his
They also mentioned
era.
One that I had forgotten about.
Which?
I don't remember. I've forgotten about it again.
Well, there's Sylvester Stallone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that I knew and I've seen.
There's Marlon Brando sucking a guy's dick, which is easy
That's
to find.
It.
And there's the promo.
How am I just now hearing about Marlon Brando?
I didn't know that either.
Taking a D.
Well,
I knew about that one.
You can read my recaps on Decider because I link out to it. But yeah, Google it. Oh, you can find it. Reportedly, it's, and this is not a joke, this is literally true. Reportedly, it belongs to Wally Cox.
Yep. I'll buy it.
It is time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV lately. Tara Ariano, what do you got?
I got a high brow and a low brow that happens to correlate to real good and real dumb. Starting with the highbrow one first, Somebody Somewhere. It's a new half-hour show on HBO, which, other than episode length, is a very strange lead-out for The Righteous Gemstones on Sunday nights, which I realize this is not how people watch TV anymore, but just saying. Sam, who's played by the great Bridget Everett, returned to her hometown of Manhattan, Kansas, to take care of her sister Holly while she was terminally ill. But Holly has died before the start of the series, and now Sam is still living in Holly's house, has just started a job in town, but is not sure what her life is supposed to be. One of her coworkers at the educational testing job is Joel, the great Jeff Hiller, who remembers her from when they were in choir together in high school and is still a bit starstruck by her now. And he very gently makes friendly overtures to her, eventually asking her to choir practice at his church. And she says it's not her thing, but he encourages her to come and see that it's not what she thinks. And it turns out to be a very shaggy underground cabaret for all the weirdos in town. Drag King Marie Hill plays the MC. Joel sort of bullies Sam into singing Don't Give Up on her first night, and we can see how much it means to her to get to express herself. And on the other side of Sam's life, there are her elderly parents, one of whom is failing and the other of whom is trying to cover for her. So content warning for those of us with aging parents who may not want to engage with that kind of material right now, no matter how well it's executed, which is very. Sam also has a married sister whose daughter Sam dotes on and whose husband seems checked out but may have secrets. And the sister herself seems like a mean bitch at first, but as the series goes on, we develop more empathy for her as the person who's been looking after things at home while Sam wasn't there. And the show is impressive in the way it slowly reveals itself. There's still a ton we don't know about the characters that a less confident pilot would have exposited. The best way I can describe it is to say it doesn't feel like a show. It just feels like watching real life. Moments of messiness, moments of grace, and what they're doing with Sam and Joel's friendship in particular is very delicate and special. And I feel like this has not been promoted at all, maybe just not to me, but it is really lovely. You should check it out. From the sublime to the ridiculous, Fox has a new reality competition show called The Real Dirty Dancing. And while I've only seen the pilot, it was one of the weirdest things I've ever watched. Here's what happens. 8 C and D list celebrities, 4 guys, 4 ladies, have been brought to the resort in Virginia where Dirty Dancing was shot so that they can get paired up together and recreate particular scenes from the movie. It's not clear for what purpose. Like, there's a segment in the pilot where the dudes are copying a Johnny Castle dialogue scene, which for the episode is edited together with cutaways of Patrick Swayze's scene partner from the movie. Like, I don't think there's ever going to be a full version of the movie where randomly selected scenes show these reality TV participants performing the two lead roles. But I actually don't know what we're doing here. Like, I don't think they win money for themselves or for a charity or whatever. Like, it's purely just the exercise of doing it.
Yeah, I got a screener for this, and yeah. I read the thing like 4 times and was like, I don't understand what this is. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's both very simple and completely bizarre. Like, where's the verb? I don't get it.
Right. So, yeah, Dancing with the Stars also is not like you just win a trophy plus, you know, the exposure, which actually makes a difference in some of these people's careers. But at least on that show, you're doing numbers for an audience with a professional dancer, and this is just newbies who don't know anything dancing with each other. But anyway, the stars, air quotes, are Kat Cora, celebrity chef, Lonnie Love, talk show host and very good Drag Race guest judge, Angela Johnson-Reyes, comic, Brie Bella, wrestler, Corbin Blue, High School Musical star, Howie Doro, Backstreet Boy, Tyler Cameron, former Bachelorette contestant, and then I 100% forgot this guy. I had to look him up. Antonio Gates, football player. Obviously, that's why I couldn't remember who he was. I don't know football.
Right.
So they're definitely not all starting from the same 0. 3 of them need to know how to learn choreography for their full-time jobs. I'm including Brie Bella, duh. One of the executive producers is Chris Culvener, who is also responsible for Holy Moly, a perfect show in its category, and Finding Magic Mike, which I talked about in December. It's not dissimilar to this, other than that Finding Magic Mike is good. The other thing that makes the experience watching the screener incredibly surreal, Sarah, I'm sorry for this reason that you didn't watch it, is that there's no music in it at all. The music has been stripped out of all the scenes from the movie.
Oh, my God. Why? And
the pilot leans on those scenes heavily. But there also is not music playing during the climax of the episode when the pairs are demonstrating the choreography they've learned. And I was going to include a clip of silence, footsteps, other contestants yelling encouragement. But apparently, I watched the screener in a brief window before Fox took it down. Probably for that reason that it was incredibly weird, so you'll have to take my word for it. But anyway, there's supposed to be a lift for Howie and Angela, but he biffs it such that he reaches through her legs and then just ends up holding her by the crotch, and I know they couldn't edit around it. I'm not going to tell you to watch this show, but it is almost worth it just for that really unfortunate but also hilarious moments. Anyway, there are only 4 episodes. If you really love dance or Dirty Dancing, it's not a giant commitment of your time, but I'm telling you, it is just 5,000 talking heads of people saying good girl about baby, swagger about Johnny, and out of my comfort zone about themselves, and it's very little dancing, so skip it. It's not good.
Yeah.
for my plug, I already mentioned when we were talking about Pam and Tommy up top that I'm going to be recapping that for Decider. And I also recently interviewed Anthony King, who is a writer on The After Party, the new Apple TV Plus show. So I'm just going to link to my author page on Decider, and you can find both of those and everything else that I've ever written for them there.
All right. Thank you, Tara. Now, Dave, what do you have for us?
Oh, man. Here's the thing. We are living in, well, let's just call them unprecedented times. And
what makes you say that?
It's a long story. I am at a stage where even almost Pam and Tommy is too emotionally complex for me. I don't want to be sad at all. I don't want to revisit how dark and disgusting humanity can be. I'm good. So what we're doing here in the house is just like watching old episodes of Top of the Pops and Solid Gold and stuff like that.
Love it.
Because it's easy on the brain. It's a simpler time.
Easy on the eyes too, Andy.
Very easy on the eyes, but yeah, there is a there's a Twitch account called Museum of Home Video, and it's a bunch of weirdos from like who worked at Vidiots and you know various video stores around LA, and they have come together and they once, twice, sometimes three times a week go live on Twitch with just compilations of crazy found stuff. And it's sometimes it's music videos. Sometimes it's a compilation of Lucille Ball drunk on talk shows. Sometimes it's, you know, just a lifetime of Little Richard being interviewed. It's just good, nourishing stuff. Every Tuesday night they go live at 7:30 Pacific. But if you join their Patreon, which you should, you can watch their stuff anytime. And also, oh, it's so good. It's so good. And then occasional Friday nights, they have a thing called Music Video Drome. Where it's nice. Just, it's all music videos and it's good. It feels good to the soul. also, while I'm in the past, Buzzer on Pluto TV, is just a full game show network, of old game shows. And every night, twice a night, they play the match game Hollywood Squares Hour from, it was a one season show from 1983 and 84, hosted by Gene Rayburn and, John Bauman, Bowser from Sha-Na-Na.
Oh. I forgot.
They tackle it together. Gene Rayburn cannot fucking stand him. And it's plain as day, that Gene was just like, I want to be on this, but they're like, we got to go for a younger crowd. Let's get Bowser from Sha-Na-Na.
Yep. He was at Woodstock, right?
Yeah, it is a, he was, yeah. It is a who's who of 1983 and 84 talent. You'll get Nedra Voles, the Adelaide from Different Strokes. You'll get various, you know, people from Hotel and The Love Boat and Chips. You'll get Jim J. Bullock just zooted up out of his mind. overall, it's fun to watch and play Cocaine or Alcohol. Because it's about half and half, and it's an uneasy alliance between the two. It's great.
Dave, let me pitch you something I've pitched on this show in years past, just to get your considered and expert take on it, which was back before they actually brought back Match Game recently for the ABC primetime lineup. Yeah. I always thought Match Game could be resurrected in a very true to the spirit way if they've got like Snoop Dogg era artists to come in that were all high all the time and play the match game with somebody. I feel like that would be different, but exactly to the same. Do you feel like that could have worked?
That is an idea whose time has come. I can't believe it hasn't happened.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
They did Hip Hop Squares. Do you not remember, Dave?
I know, but I wanted Match Game. I didn't want TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's a can't miss format, although the ABC one is certainly trying. There's a live or was a live version of it out here with Jimmy Pardo, who of course is the right guy for that job. And you know, comedy and comedy adjacent people from around LA who will give you, you know, a little something that you know, perhaps Leah Remini won't.
Yeah. Speaking of, when is Jimmy Pardo going to get his due as like a famous host of some sort of gamey kind of thing? Because it hasn't happened and it feels really wrong that it hasn't.
It will happen. There's no doubt about it.
All right. What would you like to plug?
Oh, I have just dropped a 10-episode investigative podcast called Waiting for Impact, a Dave Holmes passion project. Mm-hmm. It is an investigation into the whereabouts of the boy band Sudden Impact, who were featured in Boyz II Men's Motown Philly video. But it ends up being about so much more, much like Pam and Tommy. It's an investigation of themes that are important and interesting to me. And mm-hmm. it turned out to be this weirdly artistically and like personally fulfilling quest. And it's all up now. Binge it.
Fantastic. And we can also find you on Twitter at Dave Holmes.
That is correct. I am not shy about plugging all of my wares on Twitter and Instagram. Same name.
We'll see you there.
Sarah D. Bunting.
We need to talk about Cosby. Sorry to give everyone whiplash after Dave Holmes's fine let's be happy watching recommendations. But I also recommend this one, the rare docuseries of late that comes in my opinion, the correct length and not half again too many episodes. This is the four-parter from W. Kamau Bell. It premiered on Sunday night on Showtime. And it is really, really good. It is also, given that it is about Bill Cosby, pretty unfun, a sit in spots, which is what you'd expect. But the way the series goes back and forth from the history of Bill Cosby's lengthy and storied career to horrible testimony about his assaults, back to his influence, back to the testimony, back to his contributions, back to his manipulations and sociopathy. It is very effective at mirroring that conflict and reluctance that many of us have felt about this information. And with every other artist who, in addition to being an influential genius, is also a monstrous shitbag. It's very watchable. It doesn't feel too long. Our esteemed colleague Mo Ryan is in it and gets a few choice full-body eye rolls that I very much enjoyed. And Bell is expert at taking us along on his journey with this material and information without tipping too far into emotion. I wasn't sure how it was going to be that a comedian made this about this comedian, but it's the perfect choice. I 100% recommend it. And I will say again, since it's been a couple of minutes since I mentioned this, Showtime is not messing around on the documentary tip. I understand that it's like the redheaded network child of the cable packages.
It's the Burger King of cable.
It is. It is. Not that anyone even gets cable anymore except us suckers, but whatever. True crime, music/band documentaries. It's pretty much all uniformly well-made and compelling, and it's all underseen because it's not Netflix or HBO. And I'm not saying that some recent properties on both of those networks are maybe resting on destination rep instead of making harder choices about runtime and whatnot, but I'm not saying that either. Anyway, we need to talk about Cosby. My esteemed colleague Eve Beatty at bestevans.fyi reviewed it in Tuesday's newsletter. She felt much the same way I did. She also recommends you not watch the whole thing in one sitting, and I concur. So you can read her review at bestevidence.fyi. I would also like to mention that Amazon Prime members can get a free 30-day trial of Showtime right now. We will link that in the show notes. And Showtime has made the Attica documentary, which is either shortlisted or nominated for an Oscar, available on YouTube free.
Oh, wow.
All month. And finally, back to the less prestigious tip. Hey, Quated Full Podcast, it's back and it's quatier than ever. Our sixth season premiere saw our other esteemed colleague, Ellen Seppenwall, joining me and Jeb Lund to talk about Frequency. Our next episode is about Traffic. Did you remember Dennis Quaid was in that? Mm. We didn't either. We'll be joined by Zach Handlin for that one, which will drop as you're listening to this tomorrow. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts, and we are on Twitter at QuaidInFullPod.
He plays the traffic.
He does. He does it well. Very horny.
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Oh, thank good gravy, good God. The ice storm on 911 is over. And it just feels like there were like,
so
ice storm, we're in ice. Oh, God, let's just finish this ice storm.
Yeah.
No More Ice Suddenly. The end was so just like brick wall, Wild E. Coyote slam against it. Like, there is a storyline where Rob Lowe's character's son is on his deathbed, literally, and everybody's waiting for him to die because he's definitely going to die, right, guys? And he doesn't, and they forgot to film a scene with Rob Lowe and his son being happy that his son isn't dead. That's how quickly they decided to wrap up this episode.
Wow.
Not a good look for 911, no. Lone Star. This whole thing was just boring. Let's never do ice storms again, even if we get another ice storm this year. Knock on wood, we won't, but we're about to hit a cold snap. So by this time next week, me and Tara may be dead. So hopefully next week we'll get back into the lunacy of 911. Because I don't watch it for sappy pregnancy storylines or the son maybe dying and everybody, I assume, being glad that didn't happen.
What about the son, S-U-N, dying?
Oh!
Eh? Yes. Okay. All right, so enough of that garbage. So no Texas clip for you again. We'll see you next week. All right. Yep. On the next extra, extra hot, great, made possible by our supporters. Thank you so much. You can join them at patreon.com/extrahotgrade. Not laughing at the supporters. I'm laughing at the title. This is all I'm going to give you until you listen. Extra, extra hot, great, episode 165. Did you check up your butt? Mm-hmm. And then next week, right here on EHG Prime, it is a trio of Valentine's Day themed TV forcenings. And we'll let you in on exactly what that is when the time comes. I will let you know the one I gave Sarah has no love in it whatsoever. So don't worry about it. There's no love in mine. All right. That means it's time for the canon. We have a user submitting this week. Take it away, Molly.
Hey, Extra Hot Great. I'm here to present Once and Again, Season 3, Episode 16, entitled Aaron's List of Dreams, for inclusion in the canon. Once and Again was a three-season ensemble show from creators Marshall Herskovitz and Edward Zwick, best known for 30-something and My So-Called Life, along with the little reference short-lived but quite genius Relativity. These dramas can best be described as chamber shows. They all reflect play-like qualities, and there's really no better example than Once and Again. Here, Zwick and Herskovitz focus on a central generation, like in their other shows. Divorced 40-somethings Rick and Lily are a couple who blend their lives together over the course of the show. They each have two children with their own plot lines and their own sidekick. For Lily, her sister Judy, and Rick, his architect partner David. In this episode, we revisit a frequent recurring character, Lily's brother Aaron, a late 30s man living with schizophrenia, remarkably portrayed by Patrick Dempsey in his pre-Grey's Anatomy days. Here, he's continuing to improve on his regimen of antipsychotics, and his girlfriend, Miriam, masterfully played by Ally Sheedy, and he show up at Lily's house to announce that they would like to live independently from their board and care, with his list of items that he needs to be happy. Lily has spent her life trying to protect Aaron from his own self-destruction, and the family reflects on the time before the development of his mental illness. Lily realizes that she's smothered him, like others, in her controlling behavior and has worsened his lifelong loneliness of being atypical. Crushing his love for Miriam and the possibility of happiness means letting go of that control and allowing things to get messy. It's a particularly excellent portrayal of the complicated dynamics of mental illness in a family and does not pander to usual television tropes. Lily's daughter, Grace, seems to mirror Aaron best. She follows Aaron's rules, is sensitive to his needs. There's an empathy in Grace that understands the lifelong loneliness that has befallen Aaron, stuck in his own mind and isolated from others. We can see some echo of depression in her that might have played out if the show had been renewed. Even Rick captures Aaron's loneliness by saying, "This is the loneliest person I've ever seen. I could have been that lonely, but I got lucky."
Where were we? We were talking about going to Aaron's new apartment tomorrow and then picking Miriam home after that.
Oh!
Aaron, listen, sweetie. She has to
Why
go.
Can't she come with us?
Honey, Jelly says she had to go back.
I'm not going back.
I think that's for Miriam's father to decide.
I didn't vote for him!
I don't understand.
These are the rules.
No, I don't understand.
Listen.
No. No, 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 no. We need our own kitchen. We need our own locks and windows. And stuff like that. And windows.
You can have those, all of them.
What? Why do they want me to be alone when I am already?
Right.
I don't understand!
After spending time to assess whether she can let go, Lily tells Miriam's father that Aaron is assaulted by his emotions, that his own feelings are toxic to him. Just because they're limited at some things doesn't mean they're limited at everything, she says. That also applies to Lily's acceptance that the perfect life that she's built for Aaron and congruently herself will never happen. As it turns out, it's really Lily's list of unfulfilled dreams to which she declares, oh well, whatever, after toxically fantasizing her whole life. Here we see the multidimensional spectrum of emotions and practicality that arise from a family who can never solve a problem. We get gentle humor as well in Aaron and Miriam's quotation of idioms without understanding their meanings, not quite getting the perfect hostess gift instead bringing Playgirl, and loud sex in the attic with the kids quizzically hearing the thuds. Miriam exclaims, I heard there are other children I haven't even met, in reference to Rick's kids, and determines that lesbians work but not wives. The episode is a no-knack in that we don't get to see Billy Campbell's perfect backside or him tearfully emoting in the stylistic black and white talking head sequences and have to watch, let's be honest, actual intimacy as they brush their teeth in the bathroom. Sure, there are other episodes of Once and Again that get more attention, like that with Rick's daughter's Jessie's exploration of her sexuality, or the early episodes of Lily and Rick navigating dating as complicated adults. But this episode reflects the maturity of its characters and how well the show created a family, if, like Aaron's dreams, just for a short while.
Thank you, Molly. Dave, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
I did. Okay. I chose this because I am living in the past so completely these days. And Once and Again, I'm just going to tell you, is not a show I ever watched. But I was like, oh, let's look into this. And I clicked the YouTube link because it is on YouTube. And I was wrapped in the caress of a Zwick and Herskovitz credits moment, some acoustic guitar and some, you know, some text iMovie-ing into the frame. It was like it nourished my soul so completely that I was like, okay, I'm choosing this and I'm going to see if it makes me want to watch the whole show. And I think it did. I think it did. I do not care for mental illness face, by and large. Mm-hmm. It can be like portrayals of people with autism or with mental challenges can really go full riding the bus with my sister when you go for it. And Ali Sheedy is not afraid to go for it. Mm-hmm. And neither is Patrick Dempsey. But ultimately it got me. I think it was honestly the score and the color palette of a Zwick and Herskovitz production just sucked me in. Yeah, I dug it. I have a working theory that this is Ali Sheedy's character from The Breakfast Club. They are in the same universe. It is a critical Patrick Dempsey moment where he was like acting awkward but looking McDreamy.
Yeah.
It is that critical middle stage in his evolution. Mm-hmm. For Lily's daughter, I saw shades of Lisa Simpson and Michael Jackson on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
And I by the end of it I was on board. I was fully on board.
Yeah, the comfort of the palette and the theme, it really is sort of like a cozy campfire kind of thing going there.
Like, you're totally right. Snuffy Walden to tell us a story.
Yeah. Oh, Snuffy, give it to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to Sarah next, our foremost Waldenologist.
Okay, so first of all, lovely presentation and the relativity reference. I was the other one who watched that show.
No, I did too. Same.
Oh, okay. So, Relativity Hive. Assemble. I have been meaning to, like, I didn't watch this when it was on except occasionally, and I've been meaning to go back and revisit it for years now. It is on the list. It has moved up after this presentation. There are, like any other show in this universe, there are moments where people are talking to each other in such sort of perfectly reduced emotional, like everything is just like so perfectly thought out and on point. But the way it's acted is also like it puts it over that you're not like nobody would talk like this because people would almost talk like this.
Yeah.
And we had become, I think,
My So-Called Life, if you watch that, had acclimated you to a world where these shows were cast correctly so that certain points could be made exterior in a believable way. Mm-hmm. So that was happening a lot. And I also felt, for various life circumstances, reasons, and also just being a bossy, clenchy older sister myself, Lily's like, but someone has to think about what's going to happen to him, to us, to our parents, to our kids, like, and that the other two are like, what? It's fine. Let them live. And Lily's like, but I'm the one who has to come clean up because I'm the older sister. And I really felt seen and hugged and mad at Judy and Grace for being like, you're being mean because they're in love. And I'm like, okay, like, let's, who gets the call at 2:30 in the morning?
Right.
And then the dad comes in and is sort of explaining that. And then there's this scene with Ally Sheedy that I was just like, oh boy, like, here we go. Dave Holmes, I completely agree that this is an in-universe, like, Shermer High version of her character. Mm-hmm. Geographically, it totally tracks.
It's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Agree. But she, there's absolutely no, this speech has absolutely no business working, but something about, it, like, he's my list of dreams. I was like,
no. Yeah.
I mean, it's just they're very good at this. They're very good at this, like, this is grosser and meaner than I want, but like, there are boils that we all need lanced emotionally that these shows will do that. That it's like, well, what's really bothering you when you're not thinking about it? And then you're just like sobbing into a cat. And then you feel better because it's sort of like therapy. I wouldn't say this was enjoyable exactly. Like, that, it was a little bit emotionally stressful, but it was also beautifully done. And this writing team just has really an ear for how families are with each other, even if they have to be a little bit more florid and exterior than it would be in real life. So, excellent presentation. And again, relativity reference, two thumbs up.
I'll go next because I did watch this show. The one knock I will give on this episode and on this character sort of generally as the across the series is who is centered in the story, because it's about caretaking. It's not about Aaron. And if you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is a very different kind of show, like, obviously, but that is a story about mental illness, where the mentally ill person is telling it. It's just a different thing. But I will say, this is how culture was at the time. I mean, even in the 2000s, it's like the story is going to be about how hard it is to be the person looking after the person. And at least this one ends as it should, with like coming to an understanding of like, people are people and they are allowed to live as they want, even if they're not doing what you would want them to, or, you know, it causes worry. You know, every time she has an objection, there's an answer where it's like, you know, when she says that Miriam has put a pot on the stove and it's making, because she was going to make tea. And she's like, but you didn't put water in the pot. And then later is like, she could have burned the kitchen down. And Rick is like, you Rick's almost like, burned the almost kitchen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, that was sort of, that thing also got me. That was like, there's only so much clenching you can do before you realize it doesn't do anything. And you just have to, like, you just have to be.
Yes. But I do think that they, the Molly calling it play-like, that is play-like qualities, I think is very apt, because there's very economical ways that they get backstory in. Like, Miriam's dad refers to, like, the president I voted for thought that these people should be looked after, you know, by their families or whatever, like, put in the streets, which we know is what actually happened. Or, you know, the detail about, like, that's clearly a photo of actual teen Patrick Dempsey juggling, and then we get the cutaway of adult Patrick Dempsey, like, he still knows how to do it. It's like, it's sweet.
Probably from Can't Buy Me Love.
Right. Ooh,
yes, I saw it a million times. AMA.
Yes. But also, like, when Lily in her interview segments is telling the story of, like, when they found Aaron after he had tried to really hurt himself in college, that she gets at, like, the shame of that and how her father, you know, inculcated that in her, and how that still is, like, hanging over her, especially now that her dad is gone, that mm-hmm. she's taking on all of that, including the shame. And so the journey is for her to realize, like, this isn't serving me and it's not serving him, certainly. So,
right.
Yeah, it was a great episode. And it was also funny to see Ally Sheedy in this role, because I also am watching her in Single Drunk Female on Freeform, where she is the clenched mom. So I got to see Ally Sheedy.
Shades
dark.
Of Sheedy.
Dave. Shades of Sheedy, exactly. Dave Cole.
All right, so it is my job, as it usually is in Canada, to be the guy who votes against everybody else. But I find performative mental illness characterizations really off-putting. I feel like there's a line between Rain Man et al. Of an earlier era into this. And I understand, like, this was just sort of the way it was done back then, but I don't really feel like that excuses it entirely. And when I couple that with, like, the other trappings of the show, like the black and white, you know, soliloquies and all this, I'm just like, I just can't with it. Dave was right about, like, the Ally Sheedy character, just like anything, everything of an acting go at it.
Yeah.
What I like about the episode is that it really is about the people that have to be guardians to people that can't necessarily live their whole lives by themselves 24/7. What it reminded me of is, like, when my mother was exactly caught in between two generations, when her parents were failing, and then other people that she gave birth to that weren't me were causing a lot of drama, and she had to, like, manage two generations at once, and it was like Marge Simpson in that episode where hair just starts mm-hmm. falling out. Mm-hmm. Like, I got shades of that in here, and how hard it is to manage that and still be the good guy. And mm-hmm. they did that really well, and I do appreciate that. But the trappings of everything else, I didn't buy into sure. it. It felt very dated to me.
Yeah, this was never going to be a show for David T. Cole.
Yeah, and this is, as a public service, this is not Now and Again. This is Once and Again.
Right.
I always got those two shows confused.
Yes, not John Goodman as the...
Yeah, as Eric Close. No. Although, the female lead in that, Margaret Collin, also played a wife of Harrison Ford, as Celia Ward famously did.
Oh, yes.
I think they get together every year and have a little thing.
The Six Wives of Harrison Ford. Yes, yep. Exactly.
Her Ann Archer's at the window.
Ann Archer, Bonnie Bedelia, Annette Bening. Yes, mm-hmm. The whole gang.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Mr. Dave Holmes, would you say this episode canon worthy or not?
I say yes.
Sarah D. Bunting?
I also say yes.
Tara Ariano?
Yeah, me too.
All right, I vote no, but it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter, because it's 3-1. All right, that means Once and Again, Season 3, Episode 16, Aaron's List of Dreams. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Break Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to talk about the TV winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
It is the Law & Order franchise for two reasons. First of all, organized crime, yes, still a thing, has added Jennifer Beals in a recurring role, which is only going to help me maybe watch it ever again. She's really having a Beal-a-sance the last few years, and I am here for it. And Beverly D'Angelo, who I believe has played a defense attorney on SVU before, but uh-huh. I mean, who hasn't at this point? They're in season 212. I think I've been a defense attorney on that shit. Anyway, now she is playing Carisi's mother on SVU, which is, like, yes, perfect.
Yeah,
Chef's
I'm not
kiss,
mad at that.
No notes.
Casting.
I am not mad at that at all.
And I agree about Jennifer Beals. She's the only thing that I care about at all in the Book of Boba Fett. And I love her on The L Word : Generation Q. She is fantastic.
And now we know if she had severe jaundice, she would still look really beautiful.
She would. Mm-hmm.
They have a jaundice on that show?
On Book of Boba Fett, she's has like a yellowy
alien.
Tinge.
Oh, I see.
Not
Generation
Q.
I thought it was
Generation
like an L Word subject, like a weird plot twist.
And loser of the week?
Well, Showtime giveth with We Need to Talk About Cosby, and Showtime taketh away. It was announced last week. they have canceled both Black Monday and Work in Progress, which honestly both lasted longer than I thought either of them probably would.
Yeah,
three seasons for Black Monday, two for Work in Progress, but still.
The first season of Black Monday is so good. If you haven't watched the first season of Black Monday, do yourself a COVID-19 treat and binge that because it is really smart and really funny.
Yeah.
Goes right by.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Speaking about going right by, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Game time. Run!
Welcome back, everybody, to Game Time. This is the ninth game of the season. Our scores are Tara with 4. A win today means she will clinch the season. Oh. Value Guess right behind with 3, Dave Holmes. So you can tie it up today with a win.
Woo.
And Sarah has won victory. She is also here.
Also present.
Today we are playing Music Television from myself and the good folks at EHG Assist. The demands on our precious leisure time are becoming more and more onerous. Simply put, the entertainment complex is releasing too much quality content. The solution, a synergistic coupling of TV and music. In the near future, your TV shows and musical acts will merge into one entity to save you precious time.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, I will give you the name of an actor from a TV show and a song from a musical act. You tell me the before and after title of the exciting new entity they will create.
Got it.
I'll give you an example.
I'd love one.
Prepare to marvel when this song is sung by noted actor Jeff Daniels. The name of the music act,
Huey Lewis and the News,
will run into the name of the TV show,
The Newsroom,
to create the fabulous new product called
Huey Lewis and the Newsroom.
Very good.
Okay. 100% more likely to watch that than The Newsroom.
Huey Lewis and the American Rust. Just kidding. No one watched that. Also on Showtime. Mm.
So that is how the game is played. One point for each correct answer given. There are no hints. There's no stealing. There's no equalizer challenge zones. We're just going to play. Mm-hmm. Everybody has 10 questions each to go through.
Okay.
Let's throw it to the person in control choosing initiative, otherwise known as Picky, to see who's going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, we'll go Sarah, Tara, and then Dave. Are we ready to play Music Television?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting. Peter Krause will be heard singing this song on an exciting new entertainment product I want you to name. So you're going to take the TV show you think we're talking about with Peter Krause and marry that with the band from that clip to create, what do you think we got there, Sarah?
Oh, boy. Well, I just am not sure how this is going to work because I believe that that band is Sister Christian. But where was Peter Krause? When was he on a show that had Sister in the title? I just do not. Oh, you know what? I am incorrect about that. Thank God. That is actually Sports Night Ranger.
Thank God.
Sports Night Ranger is correct.
Don't you have a pop music podcast? Not anymore.
Sister Christian is the name of the song we just heard from Night Ranger. All right, to Tara.
Okay, well done, Sarah. Yes.
Exhausted.
Chris Hardwick singing this. How could we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning? What is the name of that fabulous new synergistic entertainment product?
At Midnight Oil.
At Midnight Oil is correct.
Nice pull.
All right. Dave Holmes.
Yes.
We have Will Smith singing this song. I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. I know you were right. Believing for so long. So Will Smith TV show running in.
Okay. He's here. He's with us.
Here, I've arrived. Fresh Prince of Bel Air Supply.
Yes. Absolutely. Everybody's on the board with their first point. Back to Sarah D. Bunting. We've got Ron Perlman doing this.
Yes, and A-Wall, that's our team. Step inside the party, disrupt the whole scene. When it comes to beach, well, I'm a fiend. I like my sugar with coffee and cream. Well, I gotta keep it going full steam. Too sweet to be sour, too nice to be me. When on the tough guy style, I'm not too keen. Try to change the world, I'm a plotting scheme. Mario.
As usual with games of this type, the hybrid show is one that I really want to watch. And in this case, it's Beauty and the Beastie Boys.
You are correct. Indeed it is. Tara.
Yep.
Greg Evigan doing this.
And if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you John Merrick's remains through all them crazy elephant bones. And if I had $1 million, I'd buy your love.
Production note to the Canadians listening out there. That was taken from the yellow cassette version of that song, the original one, that everybody in my area owned a copy of.
That's BJ and the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yes, you are correct. All right. No wrong answer so far.
I want a prestige TV show about how we allowed Bare Naked Ladies to happen. In 1990.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in on it too. I loved it. And I love them and all that, but like that,
It just doesn't seem
that
like
tone,
something that would happen again. And
that tone, they'd be
watch
torn
that
apart
series
on Twitter.
Yeah.
They really would. Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah.
All right, Dave Holmes, we got Red Fox doing this.
Well, I don't know while that's true, because you got me, baby.
I have caught on. I got you. I don't want to get cocky, but I feel like I've caught on. Sanford and Sonny and Cher.
Yes, Sanford Text and Sonny and Cher.
Watch the hell out of this, too.
Yeah.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting. Andre Brower doing...
No, you can't take it. No, you can't take that away from me. Head like a hole. Black at your soul. I'd rather
die than give you control. Head like a hole. Black at your soul. Okay, so it's funny how the first show you think of, you're like, Streets Inch Nails. No. It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine Inch Nails, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. To Tara.
Yep.
We've got Drew Tarver singing.
I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We got to start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take my brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is. Come on.
I don't know the artist, so I'm out.
Do you want to try to suss it out? I mean, there is you do get the first part of the artist with the title.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to give up, by all means, give up. But I'm just saying, sometimes if you think it out and try to infer.
Well, the only show I know him from is The Other Two.
All right, hand a buzzy on that one. Anybody else know it?
Dave knows.
Yes. The Other Tupac.
The Other Tupac. Yes, correct. All right, that is our first incorrect answer. Good.
Yep.
Okay. All right, let's see if Dave can keep his hot streak going with Bryan Cranston singing.
Because I'm a 21st century digital boy. I don't know how to live, but I got a lot of toys. My daddy's a lazy middle class intellectual. My mommy's on Valium, so ineffectual.
Dave Holmes nodding along.
So ineffectual. Boy, that's we're coming across some difficult.
Yeah, that's pro scansion.
Ooh. Breaking Bad Religion.
Yes, Breaking Bad Religion is correct.
Your Honor, Religion. No.
Sarah D. Bunting. This might be the most painful of them all. So I apologize that you got this one. We've got Ice-T singing.
Makes me forget that.
Like a dagger in my brain every time I hear that song.
I love that song. It's not cute. And neither would this mashup be, but I would still watch it. Law & Order SVU B40.
Yes, Law & Order SVU 40 is correct. Back to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Rob Lowe doing...
Good too. I know it's bad, but it's good.
I know. I love it too, but.
Oh, I heard the episode. This is 911 Lone Starship.
Yes, 911 Lone Star Starship. That. All right. This is my favorite entry that we've had.
Oh, no.
It is for Dave Holmes.
Okay.
We've got Peter Falk doing.
Boom, 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 boom.
Scrambled my circuits there for a moment. Columbone Thugs in Harmony.
Yes! I don't know who put that one in the list, but whoever that was at Agnes.
I
doff my cap.
Bless all of you.
Sarah D. Bunting. Jared Kiso singing this song. So, Sarah, let me walk you through this one. What parts of that do you think you know?
I absolutely know Kenny Loggins. So if this is not Letter Kenny Loggins, I don't know what.
Yes, it is.
That's how you do it.
That's how you put those pieces together.
Gorgeous, Sarah.
Tara.
Yep.
We've got Uzo Aduba doing the following song.
Okay.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
In treatment, Sabbath, just kidding. Orange is the new Black Sabbath.
Yes, that is correct. All right, this is the half point of our game. It is for Mr. Dave Holmes. We have Sebastian Stan singing. Never let it be said that the folks at EHG do not do their research when it comes to making games for our guests. The Note, Dave Holmes personal fave. What's that?
I might cry. Pam and Tommy Keane.
Pam and Tommy Keane is correct.
Tommy Keane. Everyone who can hear my voice right now, go stream some Tommy Keane songs. He was the greatest there ever was.
It's true.
Oh, my God. And again, the show Pam and Tommy Keane would be.
Yeah. Very, very different vibe.
Very different vibe. Yeah, but I'm into it. All right.
One more question for this round before we get to our score break for Sarah D. Bunting. This might be the hardest one for me. Mm. We'll see how you do. We have Little Alex Horn singing.
Breaking fools up as I'm a no limit soldier. Hey, these are salute. Pass me the doja. Make them say,
I don't know either half of that. Buzz it.
Oh, she forgot so fast.
Sorry.
Wow.
What half do you know, Dave Holmes?
Well, Matt, that was Master P.
Tara, finish it up.
Taskmaster P.
Taskmaster P is our answer there, yes.
Okay.
I was going to go Beastmaster, but they never did a TV version of Beastmaster, did they? Although,
didn't they? I thought they did.
They did do a TV show.
I'm sure they must have. Okay, well, get this. I used to live up in the hills, and Mark Singer was one of my neighbors, and it was very windy, narrow streets, and people drive like crazy people on them. But he would jog with his golden retriever at his side, no leash, because he is the Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mark Singer is the fucking Beastmaster.
There was a TV show, 1999 to 2002. It is Canadian.
Beast is spelled with a U.
Monica Schnarr from 90210, those two very embarrassing episodes, was in it.
Wow. Mm. Nice. All right, Tara, let's get back into it. This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
We got Mary Berry singing.
For a white guy.
Little known trivia fact, that actually is Mary Berry singing that.
That is the Great British Bake Offspring.
Yes, you are correct.
God, that is the sound of the flu. It's the sound of a hangover. It is the sound of just being ill and angry. Yeah, I hate it so much.
And it goes right into tub thumping is what happens.
See, I'll take 100. I will thump 1,000,000 tubs before I will listen to Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
All right, Dave, let's finish round one with you. Daniel J. Trevanti singing.
So watch out, Bill.
Sorry, Kinchla.
Hill Street Blues Traveler.
Yes, absolutely.
I would watch that too. Mm. Be careful out there.
Yeah. That is round one. Tara, let's get a score update.
It's so close. Sarah and I are tied with 5 points each. Dave Holmes, perfect with 6.
Wow. Woo! All right.
It's not that close. Honestly, it's not that close. Like one of us is perfect and two of us are not. It's not that close.
We're now in round two. So far, all the answers have been show first and then band. Now we're reversing that.
Okay.
So it's going to be the band, then the show in the answer.
Okay. Right.
Got it.
Okay.
Throwing it to Sarah, you will hear this song performed by Rufus Sewell. So let's walk you through the first one of this exciting new format. Who is the artist there, do you think?
Is the fact that Amy Mann has liked 2 of my tweets literally on my resume? Yes, it is.
All right. And what do you think that pairs with? With Rufus Swell. Sewell. He's a Sewell guy.
Swell. It would be swell if I knew a show that started with Mann that he was on. So let's guess. Oh, no, that was a character. Never mind. Amy Mann Eats World? I have no idea.
Nope, that is Amy Mann in the High Castle. He played
that position.
Oh, right.
Yes. Of course, American Nazi.
I forget that that show existed, and I watched the entire thing. That's
what? You did? Oh, my God.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Tara. I'm glad you got this one. You will hear this song sung by Sutton Foster.
Okay.
Your smiling face, look back at me.
Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Younger.
Yes, the song I got in trouble for playing on Listen to Sassy recently. Well, I wasn't supposed to because everybody hates it so much, but then it just happened.
I'll always remember it as the song that allowed me to drop some Fife knowledge.
All right, Dave Holmes.
And not the good Fife like you like.
Right.
We've got this song as performed by the late Bob Saget.
I'm moving to the country. I'm going to eat a lot of peaches. Wow. Peaches come from a can. They were put there by a man in a factory downtown. If I had my little way.
A little hint for you, Dave. This is also the longest title we have as an answer today.
Right. President of the United States of America.
Bob Saget.
Mary is funny as on videos.
Yes. There it is.
There it is. Boom.
Thank you.
Gorgeous.
Thank you. I was thinking
Takes the Village.
Fiction. Okay.
God, I have not heard that song since the 1990s, probably. That really took me back.
He is a child's music. He's a children's musician now.
Oh,
The guy from the President of the United States of America. It follows, right?
Sarah.
Yes.
Tia Mowry singing this.
Just as I thought it was going all right, I found out I'm wrong. Was right, it's always the same, it's just a shame, that's all. I could say day and you'd say
I'll night. Give you one guess who put that one in. It's me.
Of course it is.
Is that a girl's bicycle? It was his birthday recently. Happy birthday, Phil Collins. But this is Jenna's sister.
Yes, it is, in fact. Correct.
I hope he treated himself to some more Daniel Boone.
There's some more Alamoiana.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Brydon.
Yep.
Singing this song.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood, I Lie to You.
Yes, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Would I Lie to You from the UK, correct.
Beautiful. Mm.
All right, back to Mr. Holmes. We've got either Tom Bergeron or Tyra Banks singing.
Mm-hmm. It's a sleep from which you may not awaken. You build me up, then you knock me down. You play the fool while I play the clown.
All right, what's that band TV show mashup? Oh, know any part of that?
God, I know the second part, but the first I'm having trouble.
What's the second part, do you think?
Well, Dancing with the Stars. Dead Can Dancing with the Stars?
Dead Can Dancing with the Stars.
Wow. I
could not get to that at all.
Well, a band done. I've known their name, never heard a song in my life.
Same.
So
that is a ubiquitous Mr. Lovegrove from Dead Can Dance.
Sure it is.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, this song as performed by Ed McMahon.
Mid-90s as hell in here today.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
I want to hold the hand inside you.
Poster song for Melancholy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mazzy Star Search.
Mazzy Star Search is correct. All right, Tara.
Yep.
We've got Mackenzie Davis singing.
You do the deceit and you my girl. Get it on. Bang on. Get it on. Get it on.
Is this the Power Station 11?
The Power Station 11, wow. The Supergrip Power Station.
I was like, where's Halt and Catch Fire in this? Oh, right, nowhere.
All right, we got to get Dave Holmes out of here in 12 minutes, so let's do it. We've got the penultimate question for Mr. Holmes. We've got Dirk Benedict singing. You can't see the Zoom, dear listeners, but Dave Holmes might have been stumped here.
Looks perplexed.
Yeah, you just shattered my brain. So I'm assuming Battlestar Galactica is the second part?
Dirk
That's
Benedict.
That's where my brain goes. Dirk Benedict.
Yep.
He was in that.
Okay. So Battlestar.
This is a bit of a tough one because I absolutely did not play the song that most people associate with this artist.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay. Star Galactica.
No, you had the wrong show. It was the A Team.
Oh.
This is MIA Team. That was Jimmy from LA.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have. Yeah.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, here is your last question. We've got this actually might be my favorite because I came up with it and I amused myself. This is Lenny James singing. Will add, I made it for you.
So beautiful. First of all, I'd like to note that this show's only use now to yep. anyone is in game time. This is, if I'm not mistaken, Yellow Winter Sun.
It is Yellow Winter Sun. Nice.
Well done, Dave Cole.
Gorgeous.
Thank you. All right, Jack A, Tara. Jack A singing.
God, listen to me. Sweet red like a rose of a thorn bush. My golden colors of a royal flush. And it's peeling off those dollar bills.
U227.
100.
I was really hoping for 200. A 227 year bitch, but oh well. Oh, yeah. Next time.
227 Mary 3. A lot of ways to go.
We did not check in for a score break, but just to let everyone know, Dave Holmes needs to get this right to force a tie. Mm-hmm.
Get this right to force a tie. All right, here we go. Dave Holmes. We've got Scott Wolf singing.
You will pay tomorrow. Oh, 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 oh.
Yes.
Save me. Love this album.
He's nodding along. Great song. Mm-hmm. What's that entertainment product they create?
World Party of Five.
Yes, that is correct. All right, that means we need the scores, but I hear through the grapevine we have a tie.
That is correct. Sarah has 8 strong points. Dave and I are tied with 9 apiece.
All right. Curse you, MIA team. This is it. We got a tiebreaker. First person to shout out the answer will win.
Good luck, you guys.
Here we go.
Here we go.
We've got Richard Dean Anderson singing.
Yep, this is Fleetwood MacGyver.
Fleetwood MacGyver is correct. Wow. What a quick answer.
What a competitor.
Absolutely wow. Gorgeous. Amazing.
I am super competitive, but only with shit like this.
All right. Same. That means we've got a winner for today. And guess what? I can use this one.
Dave.
That was really fun. Thank you.
That was so much
assist.
Fun.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We watched all the Pam and Tommy tapes before going around the dial with stops at Somebody Somewhere, Real Dirty Dancing, Museum of Home Video, Match Game, Hollywood Squares Hour, We Need to Talk About Cosby, and 911 Lone Star. Molly made a successful Kenan pitch for Once and Again. We crowned winners and losers, and Dave Holmes was the winner of this week's Game Time from at EHG Assist. Now everybody except Sarah is at 4 for the season. Next week's going to be exciting. Next up, did you check your butt on Extra Extra Hot Great? And on the next EHG Prime, a trio of TV forcenings. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
the other Tupac,
Sarah D. Bunting.
Pretty sure the word is compensatory.
And Mr. David Holmes.
Dirk Benedict was also on Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, he was.
So technically I'm right.
Ding, ding. You are correct.
Well, guess what? You ain't getting dick. Because your work sucks and I'm fucking done.